T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. Hardline, News Radio 930 WBEN, hour number 2. And then you're done with us. Then you can start those pregame festivities.
The countdown is already on, Joe.
Maybe a nap. I would advise against no nap. You don't want to fall asleep at halftime in a tied game.
Oh, absolutely not.
But, you know, that's me. We'll see. We'll see tomorrow whose plan worked out best. But we are delighted this hour to be joined live from the Capitol, Mr. Dave Leventhal. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, and go Bills. I hear there might be a big game coming up tonight.
Oh, man. Dave, do you remember the last time the Bills played a Sunday night game?
Yeah, I have to dig back into the recesses of my memory. I remember being there for a certain Giants-Bills game, which we got destroyed in pretty significant fashion, but I'm not sure if that's the last one.
The last one was back when I was in college, 2007, when we got I don't know the right word to use. Let's just say it was against the Patriots, and it wasn't much of a game after halftime.
Yes.
The word annihilation comes to mind, Joe.
I'm hoping that's not the case tonight. I don't think it will be. This is a lot better team than that 07 squad.
Dave, I have to ask you before we get into politics, what's your opinion of Josh Allen? Do you think he's the real deal?
Well, I mean, any Buffalonian, any Bills fan who's watched him over the past several games, perhaps last week not included, has to feel pretty great about the progress that he's made and, of course, the performances that he's had. He does look like the real deal. I want every reason to like the guy, and certainly do from what I've seen, but hey, look, you know, we're 9-4. We haven't been 9-4 in a generation going into the season at this point in time. So let's put it in perspective. This has exceeded, I think, most of our expectations, certainly mine. And, hey, all we got to do is win one of these next 3 games. And I would love to go to bed tonight knowing so well that the Bills are in the playoffs.
And take that pressure off the next 2 games. You know, that's just the beauty of it. If we can make it happen tonight, it takes all that pressure off for the next 2.
And Dave, you're a lot better than I, because let me tell you, if they win tonight, I will probably still be awake because of the adrenaline when my alarm goes off at 3:30.
I didn't say I'd be going to bed anytime soon, but, you know, hey, it's going to be a good night if things go our way.
All right. Now, Dave, I have to ask you, first question off the bat, are you sick talking of impeachment?
As a reporter here in Washington, D.C., you can't professionally get sick about it because it's dominated literally everything that we're talking about, writing about, investigating, be it what it may. So, and it's something that we're going to have to get full used to, that we're going to be hearing about for the next many weeks. Although impeachment trials are supposed to immediately start after the House impeaches a president, we're going to have a good long winter Christmas break to deal with before we come back to Washington, D.C. in January for that trial to start. I think most people hope in earnest so that it can get moving, but there's no guarantee of that either. So January is going to be impeachment month for everyone across the country, and it could be a situation where it could wrap up relatively quickly, and also there's a very real scenario that it's going to be a relatively long process that could not be measured in days, but it's going to be measured in weeks, Joe.
Dave, how does this follow? So yesterday, halftime of the Army-Navy game was pretty much halftime of both college basketball games going on. So I found myself on C-SPAN. Yes, out of all 400 channels, somehow I got myself on C-SPAN. And I noticed that the articles of impeachment in the Clinton impeachment were being debated also in December. When did that trial begin?
That trial began and I have to look back at the exact date, but it was very quick. I think it was within several days, maybe a week of the actual vote in the U.S. House. So it was something that it happened the way it was supposed to happen, at least the way it was drawn up by the framers, that The trial would begin quite quickly after the actual articles of impeachment were voted on by the U.S. House. So here again, in this situation, it's just happening during Christmas, and it's happening when everyone here on Capitol Hill, from the members of Congress themselves to staffs or whatnot, they got plane tickets out of here. I'm going to Texas myself. A lot of people are going to be leaving, so the expectation that this would actually be happening over the holidays, no, not going to happen this time around.
Dave, let me ask you, because obviously you're there. You talk to the big wigs. Are there any concerns from Democrats in Congress that votes from their party members against impeachment is a bad look going into 2020?
Yeah, there is concern, and let's just step back for a moment. There has been concern for months and months and months by Democratic leaders here that impeachment was just simply the wrong way to go. Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, others at the top of the Democratic Party have long thought, up until very recently, that the best way to get Donald Trump out of office, if you wanted him out of office, was to do so at the ballot box, to wait until November 2020, put up a strong Democratic candidate, and beat Donald Trump through the vote, not through the impeachment process. Obviously, that didn't go that way. There were basically an insurrection in the ranks, and that many, many Democrats in the U.S. House wanted to go ahead and impeach the president. Ultimately, that, of course, happened. Nancy Pelosi went on board with that, and here we are today. But the notion that you could have a couple of Democrats peel away and vote against the articles of impeachment, expect that to happen. There are probably going to be a few, particularly those who are more moderate Democrats, who are in swing districts, who might have a tough race ahead of them in 2020 themselves. Or you could also, too, Joe, have a situation where, since there are two articles of impeachment, you might have a couple of Democrats, a handful of Democrats, who vote in favor of one of the articles and actually vote against another of the other articles to perhaps give themselves some political cover, or maybe they just fundamentally disagree with one and not the other. So that could be a likelihood as well.
Dave, the president has been tweeting quite a bit. I think he's had 123, which may be a record for him in one day. And in addition to impeachment, he was tweeting about Greta Thunberg, who Time Magazine named Person of the Year. What are you hearing in D.C. about that? Many people have characterized it as petty, that he's going after a young girl and so forth. What's been the reaction down in Washington?
Well, I've talked to Republicans and Democrats both who just think it's generally a bad look, regardless of who the 16-year-old is or what she's done. The notion that the president of the United States would be making fun of a 16-year-old, a child, is, in their opinion, not the greatest thing in the world for the president to be doing or spending time on. That being said, it seems effectively that all Republicans who support the president or not have just come to grips with the idea that Donald Trump is going to tweet what Donald Trump wants to tweet, that nobody is going to be able to stop him, and that if he wants to tweet about this or anything else, he's going to do so, and that's really going to be up to him.
You know, it's interesting, too, because Melania Trump really keeps a low profile, and yet she was outraged, reportedly, by Barron Trump being mentioned when the professor in the hearings brought him up, and then she apologized about that. But yet, she was very upset about that, and according to all reports, there was no outrage about her husband saying anything about Greta Thunberg. And even Stephanie Grisham, the press secretary, said that President Trump and Melania Trump expressed themselves differently. Do you think this will continue to have traction, Dave?
Well, expressing themselves differently would definitely be an understatement. Been effectively silent on what Donald Trump has tweeted about Greta Thunberg, and also too, it's worth noting that Melania Trump is for a long while since becoming first lady. She started this Be Best campaign, goes under the hashtag on Twitter, hashtag Be Best, and it's all about sort of anti-bullying and being respectful to people, particularly on social media, and just being your best when you're performing any type of communication such as that. And of course, when her husband, the president of the United States, begins tweeting things that are personal attacks on people, particularly in the situation that we're just talking about right now, it would seem to undercut that message just a little bit.
Dave, I want to go back to the upcoming impeachment trial. I think we know how the vote's going to go. I am interested in seeing who votes against it and who on the Democrat side. But the Senate trial, Do you see or have you heard of any potential Republicans who may vote to convict the president, or right now whose vote may be up for grabs?
I have not, and it seems unlikely at this point that there would be almost any Republicans who would vote in favor of convicting the president, vote in favor of removing the president. So this seems like a done deal, Joe, in that there's going to be a whole lot of shouting between now and that ultimate vote in the U.S. Senate, but there are several things that appear to be a done deal. Number one, that the U.S. House of Representatives will impeach the President of the United States, and that will happen this coming week. And number two, that this is going to move to the Senate, and that the U.S. Senate, which is controlled by Republicans, which requires a supermajority of two-thirds of the U.S. Senate to convict a president in an impeachment trial, that it is absolutely not going to convict the President of the United States on either of these two articles of impeachment. So President Trump, whether it's in January or February, whatever the timing may be, is going to get out of this, barring something just completely unforeseen at this point in time. He's going to get out of this still being president of the United States and also being able to sort of ride a wave that will come with being exonerated by the U.S. Senate. He'll be able to say, look, this was a hoax the whole time. I was not convicted. I'm still the president of the United States, and onward and upward. And you got to remember back even when Bill Clinton was acquitted in his Senate impeachment trial, that he pretty much did the same thing. Of course, a different circumstance. He was at the end of his second term as president, although Al Gore was running alongside with him. And they actually went to Buffalo, New York. I was there in the arena downtown, and they had a big rally, and it was sort of a campaign opportunity for Al Gore and definitely a victory lap for Bill Clinton. I would be very surprised if Donald Trump wouldn't treat this as anything but a huge, massive victory for him and something to shore up his support and the interest in his reelection campaign, and that Donald Trump will be gloating about this from the time it happens until all the way to the election.
There, you look at the polls, and I know we learned in 2016, Dave, you can't look at the polls too closely. But the president's approval rating, not that it's all that high, but hasn't really taken a hit during this impeachment. And now it looks like favor of the impeachment is starting to take somewhat of a hit. Is there a hope by Democrats in the Senate that, yes, the president might not get convicted, but if they put on a good enough show or present facts that public opinion can start moving back toward favor of impeachment?
Well, the core of the Democrats' argument here is that the president has abused his power and, in fact, in their opinion, continues to abuse his power. Now, you may violently disagree with that. You may support that notion, but that's going to be basically the argument that you're going to be hearing from Democrats. And they're going to be tamping down expectations, too. You've already heard them do so to this point, that even if this doesn't end in a conviction of the president, even if he isn't removed from office, that a whole bunch of stuff is going to come to light that wouldn't have otherwise come to light about the way that the president conducts his business on behalf of the American people, and that he is using, again, in their opinion, the office of the president of the United States, presidency of the United States, to go and get foreign powers to attack political rivals, which is something that would, under any circumstance, Democrat, Republican in office, undermine elections in the country, which are supposed to be free and fair and just completely devoid of any type of foreign influence. Is that going to be something that is going to be compelling to voters in October and November of 2020? Hard to predict, but you better believe that Democrats are going to try to do that going forward, and that really starts now.
And Dave, I wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about NY27. What do you hear about post Chris Collins here in the Buffalo area? There are a lot of candidates who have tossed their hat into the ring, and Beth Perlato source said that the candidate attended a policy discussion at the White House. But I'd say she's probably the least known of everybody. What are you hearing about NY27 in D.C.?
Yeah, it hasn't been quite the talk of the town, given that little impeachment thing that we've got.
There's that matter, yes.
Buffalonians all the time, and definitely New York 27 comes up. It seems that in the aftermath of Chris Collins pleading guilty and leaving a congressional office, that we have what's going to be quite a primary fight on our hands here, but that when you look to the general election, that the one thing that seemed to almost be a certainty, save for Chris Collins being involved, is going to happen, that this is going to be a Republican stronghold, that it will be incredibly difficult for any Democrat to win that seat. You got to remember that New York 27 back in 2016, when Donald Trump was running for president, that it went 24 percentage points in the direction of Donald Trump. This is an incredibly red district. There's no indication that if you have a serviceable Republican candidate running in that election, that person isn't going to win. Now, Nate McMurray is going to do everything that he can, and he may get a challenge, get a strong challenge in a primary too. But presuming he is the Democratic nominee again, then, well, it's going to be very difficult for him to make a compelling case in a district like that to be elected when he's not running against somebody who is tainted by scandal and federal investigation and now is going to, in all likelihood, be going to jail for a period of time and definitely be penalized in court in a major way.
It certainly looks that way, Dave. And we've got Chris Jacobs, Rob Ord, who've declared, Beth Perlotto, as I mentioned, possibly Stefan Mihailu. And there's talk today, your colleague or your political colleague, if you will, Bob McCarthy, was talking about Stephen Hawley throwing his hat in the race. Any idea if you think that might happen, that he's jumping into the race late and whether he can gain any traction?
It's possible. All of this is kind of in the context of, well, you know, would David Bellavia get involved in this? He ultimately chose not to. Somebody who, by any definition, is an American hero, riding the wave of being honored at the White House and in the fashion that he was. Somebody who has really just gained stature and profile in the most incredible of ways, and deservedly so. Since he's not involved, it's really going to be a fight, and you've got candidates who are in the District 27 race on the Republican side, somewhat well-known, but definitely nobody with the last name of a Collins or, Bellavia, somebody who definitely had more name recognition than many of the candidates. Perhaps Stefan Mihailu might be the most well-known, just given his stature from his media days and television days and as an elected official right now, but it's going to be a tough one, and Republicans are going to have a big choice on their hands.
Dave, keeping it in Congress, news came out, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that New Jersey Congressman Jeff Van Drew is going to or is contemplating switching parties from Democrat to Republican. Now, he has been the loudest voice on the Democrat side against impeachment. Is there anything else to this switch?
Yeah, and probably a name that most people have never heard of until right now. He hasn't been somebody who has had the limelight on him as other members of the House, particularly House leaders, either on the Republican, the R side or the D side. But this is somebody in Jeff Van Drew who just a few weeks ago said that there was no way that he was switching parties, and he's certainly being painted by Democrats as having made a very cynical decision in the sense that he's switching to the Republican Party. He represents a Republican district or a Republican majority district that went for Donald Trump in 2016 and is going to probably face, if he stays a Democrat, a very strong primary race and could even lose in that. But on the other side, you got to be a political pragmatist sometimes. And this is somebody who has long said that he doesn't support impeachment. He's switching parties and that he has good reason to do so. And that's going to go down. Now, the president is making a very big deal about it, and rightfully so on his part, given that he's got a Democrat to go to the Republican side. And I think any Republican would make hay about that. But is this really going to matter in the whole scheme of things? Probably not. Is this going to matter to the impeachment vote? Probably not. Is this a black eye for Democrats to a certain degree? Yes, absolutely. But it's not something that is really probably going to have any material effect on the two big things at hand here. Number one, impeachment, and number two, the Democrats' ability to hold the House in 2020. This is just one seat out of several hundred here, and just one race out of several hundred as well.
Across the pond, Dave, Boris Johnson's election victory. I'm wondering what you think it means for Democrats in the U.S. and relations between President Trump administration and also Boris Johnson. What do you think the fallout will be with that?
Well, if you're a Republican, it's not fallout at all. It's a great thing. Donald Trump and Boris Johnson have forged at least a solid working relationship. The UK is one of our strongest, biggest, most important allies, and having two leaders who are copacetic with one another is a good thing, I think most people would think. And definitely, President Trump and Boris Johnson just philosophically have very similar thoughts on a lot of policy matters, most importantly, which for both the UK and to an extent the United States, as it applies to our international relations, is Brexit. And both of them are very much on the same page when it comes to wanting the UK to leave the European Union. Donald Trump feels that's the right way to go. And Boris Johnson is at the tip of that particular spear about UK going through with Brexit, which has just been an absolute disaster of a process and one that's not over yet.
You know, David, it strikes me, too, that both of these gentlemen are cut from the same cloth in that they're unorthodox politicians. And Boris Johnson is an interesting character, too. I saw him walking around carrying his dog. And, you know, he's very outrageous in the way he conducts himself. And it strikes me as odd the way many people in Britain seem so buttoned up and proper. How do you think this guy has been able to resonate with the British and the UK public to the extent that he has?
Well, it's always a little dangerous to draw too many parallels between UK British politics and in American politics. But yeah, there he was in the midst of this election, standing on stage, talking with a dude with a bucket on his head, guy dressed up as Elmo from Sesame Street or something that looked like Elmo. I mean, it was bizarre. It was crazy. It was unorthodox in every way that you'd have it. But in a way, it's kind of almost just what you would expect in politics at this point in time, whether it's across the pond in the UK or even here in the United States. This is just a very weird and wild time. There's nothing buttoned up about politics in either of our two countries. And in a way, it would almost seem odd if that thing wasn't happening, or that type of thing wasn't happening in politics for either of our two countries.
Dave, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Paul Volcker's name. He was 92 years old. He passed away, and many considered him a great man and a great American because he did things that many people would not want to do. He administered some tough medicine when the American economy badly needed it. How do you think Volcker will be remembered after all these years?
Well, he has an incredible legacy, and somebody who, when he took the helm of the Fed back in the late 1970s, many people who were born after he was around or born even in the 70s just have no appreciation. And I was born in 1979, so it's history to me, too. But here's somebody who basically just stood firm and fought to get just insane, incredible inflation, stagflation, where the economy was an absolute mess at that point. The dollar was incredibly weak. People were very, very reluctant to invest in anything on paper, whether that's U.S. currency, whether that was stocks, and was able to hold the line even as things got worse before they got better. His tenure dovetailed with Ronald Reagan coming in as president, and they were able to, along with many other factors, usher in during the 80s a massive turnaround from the horrible economic times of the late 1970s and into the early 80s when you had back-to-back recessions. So bottom line, he'll be remembered as somebody who really set a American monetary policy and helped the finances of the United States go in a direction where we've never had a worry ever since about inflation of the sort that we saw back in the 1970s when, man, people were investing in just about anything that they possibly could that wasn't paper, from oil to gold, precious metals, agriculture, beans, whatever you wanted. It seemed like a better thing to do at that point in time than anything dealing with money.
The old saying, a picture paints a thousand words. I remember the gas lines, just snaking around the gas stations. And I really give Volcker a lot of credit for being able to stem inflation the way he did and raise those interest rates to beat it down. It really was a remarkable thing to do and extremely unpopular. I can't imagine in today's day of Twitter and social media the kind of beating he would have taken on those fronts.
And he really did. And he'd probably be taking a massive beating from Donald Trump or any other president. It was just a different time, and it really, for the Fed, it set kind of, he drew a line in the sand, a very profound one, saying, look, we're going to do what we think is right, and we're going to not bow to political pressure from the president, for sure, and even Congress, which has oversight of the Fed.
Dave, I've got to ask you one last question. There's something called headline stress disorder. And it's a new survey of 2,000 Americans that found that the political discourse is so vitriolic right now that it's taking a serious mental toll. An astounding 78%, according to this article, of respondents say politics are the number one source of anxiety and stress in their life. You deal with it day in and day out. How do you de-stress? How do you get away from all the madness of politics?
Well, I'm going to go for a nice long run today, and even though we're sitting here from the U.S. Capitol where we live, I try to just, you know, get out in nature, get away from the news, even though I live right in the belly of it. But hey, this survey doesn't surprise me in the least. Everyone who I talk to, members of my family, friends, Republicans, Democrats, it's overwhelming. And hey, as a journalist, it's hard to keep up from hour to hour what's going on when you might have any of 2, 3, 10, 20 different news breaks and headlines coming out in a day, and it's difficult to keep track of it. So I always feel incredibly empathetic for consumers of news, for readers of news, trying to understand exactly what's going on, why they should care, why this matters, and what it means to their own lives. And it is stressful. So, unfortunately, it has the result sometimes of people tuning out and people not caring as much as perhaps they should on big decisions that are getting made that will have an effect on their lives, even in some pretty profound ways. But I don't think there's any great elixir to it at this point. This is the way that things are at this point, and we will have a very big decision in November of 2020 on our hands. So I would just encourage people to find good news sources, have a omnivorous diet of news so that they're not in an echo chamber just listening or reading or watching one thing all the time, and so that they can be as informed a citizen as they possibly can be to make good decisions for themselves, their family, their community, and their country when it comes time for them to exercise the right that they have, which is to go and vote and to go and participate in democracy, support a candidate, work for a campaign, volunteer, and all the things that we can do and we're lucky enough to do in this country by being a free democracy as we are.
You know, in about a little less than 9 hours, we'll have a good distraction too, Dave. So go Bills, enjoy your run, and thank you so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Go Bills indeed.
Yes, thank you, Dave. Dave Leventhal joining us from D.C. We all need that distraction, Brenda.
No doubt about it.
Everyone makes fun of, you know, I'm a little too obsessed with my sports teams, you know, the Mets, Virginia Tech, the Bills. But it's a good 3 or 4 hours that you can just forget everything else and, you know, what's the word? Unite with people that sometimes won't talk to you because of your political differences.
Well, that's one of the things about sports that I truly love, Joe, and I've been a sports fan my whole life. It does unite people from all different professions and ethnicities, and we all have sort of that common goal. You want to see the Bills win or the Sabres win. There is a certain esprit de corps about that with sports that brings people together in a unique way. And in a society that's so fractured right now, I think sports are even more important than ever to bring people together. You know, you see people driving around with Bills and Sabres flags. You can find common ground to talk about something like that. It just is a wonderful way to bring people together, no matter what their political beliefs, their religious beliefs, whatever their family backgrounds are. That's the true beauty of sports, in my opinion.
I agree. All right, we are late for a break, so we are going to take this break, come back, talk about a few local things happen.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. It is Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Thank you to Siobhan O'Connor for joining us in the first hour, and to Dave Leventhal for joining us in the second hour. You know, Brenda, you always tell yourself, all right, we've got this many questions. I hope this gets us. And then the segment's over and you're like, I didn't even get through all the questions.
I know. That's a good feeling, though, right?
It is, yeah.
Dave is just a fountain of information, and I really enjoy listening to him every Tuesday with Brian and Susan on the morning show here on WBEN. And I like the fact that he's a Buffalo guy. You know, he's really loyal to this area, still wears the red, white, and blue, and is a great resource for us here at WBEN. So nice of him to take time on a Sunday morning. And especially like we were saying, Joe, the guy eats, breathes, and sleeps politics. That's what he does for a living. And as he mentioned, he's in the belly of the beast. So it's probably very difficult for him to decompress. And so all the more we appreciate him taking time on a Sunday.
Oh, for sure, for sure. So we covered impeachment. We covered party switching. We covered NY27, which it seems everyone's starting to forget, Brenda, but we're 4 months away from that special election. So you know these next few months, Hardline specifically, will be NY27 most of the time.
Oh, no doubt about it. But it goes to show you how much is happening in the world of politics from week to week, not to mention from day to day, because it's easy to sort of put that on the back burner because there are always other things that seem to come up. And one of the other things locally that came up was Kevin Shuler. Does that name ring a bell? Well, he's the guy who was convicted in the Buffalo Billion trial a few months ago, and Republicans recently on the Niagara County Legislature, in fact, it was this past Tuesday, voted to hire Kevin Shuler by an 8-5 vote as Niagara County's public information officer. And really, that's essentially the county's spokesperson. So wondering what you think about that, 803-0930, star 930. I find it kind of hard to believe that they couldn't find somebody else without a felony on their record to be the PIO for Niagara County. He will serve in that capacity, earning a salary of $79,000. In fact, there was a $10,000 jump from the job's 2019 salary. So Shuler will respond to reporters' inquiries and handle publicity for the county government. He's expected to start early next year. And a Republican Majority Leader Randy Bratt, who is a Republican from North Tonawanda, felt that Shuler was the guy for the job because he called him the most qualified job candidate. And, well, I'm wondering what you think about that. I think there might have been other people who may have been qualified. On the other hand, there are those who say everybody deserves a second chance. The only thing that kind of bothers me is that they push this through rather quickly, and it makes you wonder, what was the hurry? You know, if this guy is truly the best candidate for the job, why not let it play out? Why not let everything play out the way it should instead of rushing through? So, Joe, looks like, do we have a call? No? Oh, no call. Okay. So, Joe, what did you think of this whole situation?
Yes, yes. But 803-0930, if you'd like to get on. You know, Brenda, first thing that comes to mind, not a great look for Niagara County.
Really bad optics.
And like you said,
makes you wonder.
There's not a better option. I mean, usually for most of us, if we get convicted, that's going to hinder our opportunity at a spotlight job, as this gentleman is getting. So it is a bad look, but in 2019, not overly surprising, if that makes sense.
Well, you know, and really, Shuler was a behind-the-scenes guy, and he handled political matters for Lou Simonelli, and then he avoided a prison sentence for his cooperation. So Shuler was ordered, instead of going to jail, he was ordered to perform 400 hours of community service, and also he was subject to 2 years of supervised release. So Shuler was really able to avoid spending time in the Gray Bar Hotel, which is, to me, the my favorite term for prison. But I'm wondering, Joe, what do you think the urgency was here? All of a sudden, they decided to put Shuler in this position of public information officer. Wondering what people in Niagara County think about this.
Probably an attempt for so it doesn't have didn't get the media attention that it is now starting to get. Like I told you, Brenda, I had not heard the story until you brought it to my attention, and Kevin from Pendleton, who texted in, brought it to my attention. So far, they've been somewhat successful, but I think once the word gets out, you're going to see some outcry from the community. And my question to you, Brenda, do you see this maybe getting reversed and him getting removed if the public does get outraged about it?
No, I don't. You know, I think that, you know, there will be a lot of scrutiny on Kevin Shuler in this new position. He was quoted as saying that he will be effective in his new job and would not again violate the public trust. He said he learned from his mistakes, and he was qualified to do the PIO job. Interesting story here with this Kevin Shuler situation. It was a partisan 8-5 vote. The legislature approved the hiring of this gentleman. He was what's called a politically wired executive at LP Simonelli. And if you recall, he pleaded guilty in May of 2018 to two felony charges involving the fixing of a bid to manage the construction of the $750 million Tesla plant in South Buffalo. So, Joe, as you and I were saying, there were so many stories that come between what happened in May of 2018 to where we are in December of 2019. It's easy for this to kind of get lost in the mix of all of these stories, whether it's local, regional, or national politics. But that's the name Kevin Shuler. So now he'll serve as the county's public information officer. And Randy Bratt, the majority leader, was all for it. So we'll see what happens. It was an 8-5 vote. If you live in Niagara County, I'd love to know what you have to say. 803-0930. The Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board is always available to you as well. 30930.
Yeah, let us know, because like I said, Brenda brought that to my attention. If that was, I mean, I don't even live in Niagara County, and I'm pretty outraged about it. I can't imagine if now this person is benefiting off your tax dollars as someone who has been convicted but did avoid the, what did you call it, Brenda? I liked that term. The Gray Bar Hotel?
The Gray Bar Hotel.
I like that. I like that a lot.
You know where I first heard the term, Joe? I was always a huge David Letterman fan. And Letterman used to talk about the Gray Bar Hotel when Martha Stewart was convicted. So he used to bring that up in his monologue just about every night whenever Martha was in the news. Dennis Virtuoso is the minority leader in Niagara Falls with the legislature. He was critical of Kevin Shuler's appointment and his GOP colleagues for supporting it. Virtuoso was credited as saying, when you look at his resume, it's a fine resume, but he left out something. He left out a 36-page indictment, and he left out a 7-page plea bargain deal. So the gloves are off in Niagara County. There's always a lot of stuff going on in that county, as certainly there is in Erie County. But Joe, that was an interesting question you raised about whether they'd be able to reverse that decision. I don't think it'll happen, only because the Republicans are in charge at the moment in Niagara County. So I think Kevin Shuler will be the face of the Niagara County legislature, and people will probably be more accustomed to seeing him when breaking news happens in 2020 in Niagara County.
It'll be interesting. Brenda, now, one thing on the national scene we didn't get to with Dave, but I'd like to know your thoughts, or at least set it up. The Democrat primary
Yes.
is coming
yes.
up.
Yes, we never did get to that with Dave. You're right.
It's next week, right?
Yes, in Los Angeles. And
six candidates.
As of last count, a half dozen candidates.
It's a lot different.
All
look.
Men, I might add. There's no women who, well, no, I shouldn't say that. I should say all white. Because Elizabeth Warren will be there.
Amy Klobuchar did not?
And Amy Klobuchar, yes. Excuse me. So all white people. There are no people of ethnicity. Kamala Harris has dropped out. Cory Booker didn't make the cut. So it should be interesting to see. But I still maintain, Joe, that I don't think there's any one candidate who can beat President Trump as of today. I think that the slate has not really produced anybody who will really rise above the fray. People think that, according to some of the polls I've read, that Joe Biden can beat President Trump. I just don't see it. I have maintained all along, I don't think Joe Biden's heart is in this. I think he's doing it almost because he thinks he should run for president. A lot of these other candidates just don't seem to be gaining any traction with voters. And it'll be an interesting debate in the sense that it'll be a gaffe watch with Joe Biden. Will he make any mistakes? Will he say anything outrageous? And yet, when he does, it doesn't seem to bite him in the sense that he's still leading the pack.
I think, and Brenda, this is obviously from someone who more associates with the Trump camp. I think it's because people look at Joe Biden and they see the other candidates, especially the other five on this stage next week, and they see how far to the left they're going. And some of the economic plans that when they're asked, how is this going to be funded? They don't have an answer for
right.
it. They look at Joe Biden, gaffe machine as he is, compared to Trump, who also is known to have a gaffe here or there. And they see Joe Biden as the moderate Democrat that can get the independents that might have gone for Trump in 2016. They think this, out of all those candidates, this is the only guy that can maybe beat Trump at his own game.
It could be. But do you agree with me that none of them have really gained any true traction? Nobody has really stood out except probably Warren and Sanders because of how left they are. And that's why I don't think they have a shot. I think, you know, Democrats realize that they're just way too far to the left. They're too radically left. And so I don't see them really rising to the top. Biden is your guy. But he's a gaffe machine. I think there's still some luster associated with Joe Biden because of his connection with Barack Obama. And a lot of the other candidates, African-American candidates, don't seem to be pulling in support from the African-American community. So it's a very interesting dynamic at this point. But Amy Klobuchar, I think, may be the only one who is gaining a little bit of support in middle America. You would think she'd be kind of a slam dunk, right? She's from Minnesota. She's a senator. She's been on the House Judiciary Committee for a long time. I think there's a certain lack of charisma with her. And I think her vocal styling is difficult sometimes. She doesn't present as a really strong, charismatic speaker like some of the candidates of the past. And even President Trump, even though he makes some mistakes when he's speaking, draws people in. He knows how to play a crowd. He knows how to appeal to people. And I don't see that with her or many of the other candidates. Biden is just kind of like, you know, he's there. He's well known. He was Barack Obama's vice president for 8 years. So maybe he's the guy that can still pull in African-American support by virtue of that connection.
And that is a question that I'd like to have the answer to, because you saw Kamala Harris drop out a few weeks ago, and she said it was because she was an African-American woman. But my question to African-American voters, why do they go toward Joe Biden when you have Cory Booker, when you have Kamala Harris on the stage? Is it because you feel Joe Biden is the best to beat Trump? And in this primary, you're not really voting for the best candidate. Let's be honest. You're voting for who can beat Trump. Who out of the independents, out of those Obama voters that went for Trump in 2016, which candidate can bring those people back to the Democrat Party and defeat Trump? That is the 2020 mission.
You know, and there's seven Democratic candidates next week who have qualified for the debate in Los Angeles. In fact, they're holding it at Loyola Marymount University, a private school in L.A. But there's a lot of talk, Joe, and I'm sure you've heard about this. There's a union representing cashiers, cooks, dishwashers, and servers at the university. And some of the folks are saying that they don't want to cross the union picket line. So there may not be a debate as a result of that. It'll be interesting to see what happens with this debate. They had hoped that a lot of workers would have a contract with wages and affordable health insurance before the debate took place next week. Workers instead will be picketing when the candidates come to campus. So, Joe, the question is, will they cross their picket line?
Oh, that is a good question. I would say, I don't want to say no because of the debate, but that will be very interesting to see, Brenda. I, you know, with sports betting now available downtown, I do not want to pick either side.
Yes, I understand. Well, Elizabeth Warren, I think, is using this to her advantage. She tweeted that the Local 11, which is the union that we're talking about, is fighting for better wages and benefits, and she stands with them. So she's saying the DNC should find a solution that lives up to the Democrat Party's commitment to fight for working people. Elizabeth Warren says she will not cross the union's picket line, even if it means missing the debate. So how much of this do you think, Joe, is political rhetoric?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's all for votes, Brenda, and we'll see what happens. It'll be very interesting either way how they spin this to their campaign or through their campaign.
Yes, Bernie Sanders also said the same thing. Andrew Yang is tweeting that he will not cross Local 11's picket line to attend the debate. This could be a very light debate.
It could be. It'll be interesting to see. And Brenda, I'm sure we will talk about it next Sunday.
I look forward to it.
All
Go
right.
Bills.
Go Bills. I hope everyone gets that afternoon nap in, get rested, enjoy the game tonight. I will be back here tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Obviously, Brenda and I will be back here next Sunday at 10. Getting you up to date and informed on everything political. Enjoy your Sunday. Go Bills. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.